an abridged list of countries that you've worked in: Egypt, Sudan, the UK, Bangladesh, Cambodia, Mozambique, Russia, Rwanda, and the list keeps going on and on. How are cell phones used differently in those different countries where you've worked?
I think a lot of it is dependent on the penetration and the reach of and the quality of cell phone coverage. So, for example, when I first started doing my PhD research, I went and I did a feasibility study in Bangladesh, and this was like 2002. And at that point, the penetration was very low. They had the village phone program. The coverage was excellent. They had the village phone program, and so a lot of the village phone women were selling airtime, and it was predominantly being accessed by businesses and people who wanted to save money on travel. And there was very little uptake within the health sector. There was very little uptake within the general population. And so it was really interesting to see how, like in Bangladesh, things were actually quite slow in the very beginning, you know, and things have changed dramatically over time. And I think, you know, any network is only as good as the number of other people who are connected to that network. So, you know, if I have a phone and my sister has a phone and we live in two very different areas, we can then communicate with each other. But if she doesn't have a phone, there's no real motivation for me to get a phone. So that was something that sort of came out.
So for example, in Bangladesh with the village phone project, it kind of became like the payphone of a village, right, where everyone would go to.
Right, so, and then they would connect to other payphones or other like wealthy family members or businesses that actually had a cell phone.
But that in that case, they didn't adapt it to their personal needs because it was kind of this village property almost?
Right, right. And then on a different note, then I ended up doing my actual PhD research in Egypt because there was enough uptake within the health sector as well as the general population to consider sort of the natural progression of uses of cell phones to support healthcare. And so there, it was quite incredible. Medical professionals were one of the first groups to prioritize having cell phones. And part of that is because they could probably afford it, and they found ways of applying it to their professional work as well as to their social lives. And then in the general public, the real people that picked up on the phone to begin with were business people who traveled for work or families that had like children that were traveling that needed to make sure that they could stay in contact with their children. But in Egypt, they had a longer history of these like centrales where and these telecommunications centers where you could call from a fixed line phone to other places. Whereas, you know, in Bangladesh, they just didn't have this this like preceding infrastructure. So it's kind of interesting to look at like mobile phone use over time in different places.
So how do those differences relate to developing applications for mHealth? We're here at this week's conference talking about what would be great applications of using mobile phones in healthcare. But do they need to be designed at the national or even regional level, or can you build kind of a universal application which is then adapted at local levels?
I think you have to do both. I think you have to look at what the local realities are within the health systems and health sector, and I think some of the best development is when you have your end users involved in the design process where you go through and you're able to really study. You know, we have a computer science doctoral student working on the development of ComCare right now in the Millennium Village in Uganda. And so he's just spent the last 3 weeks following community health workers around the village, watching what they do in the household, watching what they do in the facilities, how long it takes for that individual to get from one place to another, having focus groups with them about what their priorities are in terms of their work, in terms of, you know, communication desires and those sorts of things. And when you take that information into consideration, I think you have a much better chance at developing an application that will be meaningful for the end user. And then taking that information and then working it through a business model to look at, okay, how do you operationalize that? How do you go from 5 community health workers piloting a system and developing a system to, you know, 50 community health workers using the system in real time, collecting data, getting the support that they need, plugging that into a system that spits out real-time monitoring reports that they can then use to figure out what types of ways to modify their activities, what types of ways to improve either access to health services or health service delivery. I think a lot of times the users are often absent in the technology design process, and I think that's where, and then you can then take it and look at how do you then scale that up.
But you would say that the first step is following the people who are going to be using this and seeing how you can make something that helps their workflow?
Yeah, and also finding out from the beginning, what was nice about the study in Egypt was that I just looked at how are people using mobile phones for health in general without any external support. And oftentimes you can find patterns of use that you can just standardize or strengthen or develop, like the access to the information that they would need, automated systems for some of the things that they were already doing. And so, there are sort of different ways of sort of approaching it strategically so that you're not, starting from scratch. And there are a lot of really good projects out there that, they are small and they're pilots, but, it also is a good starting point to take a look at what already exists before coming out and starting something new.
What about the difference between how men and women use mobile phones, and does that relate to mHealth applications? Are there specific mHealth applications for women, for example?
It's interesting because when I did my research, it was really difficult to find female cell phone users in general. And so, and I think in the mobile health sphere, we're actually going to be pushing the envelope on some of these things because a lot of the community health workers, a number of the facility-based health professionals that are working in sub-Saharan Africa and throughout the world are women. And so, putting the technology in their hands may, have a very different result or outcome than putting it in the hands of a male community health worker or business person, et cetera. In the natural progression in Egypt, the women that did have mobile phones were oftentimes highly skilled professionals who were traveling for work. And so the husband prioritized the mobile phone for their wives to make sure that they could keep in contact with them so that, women in some ways could serve their dual roles. They could continue to serve their role in the household as like the mother, the wife, as well as their professional roles. And there are, some really neat studies on some of the dynamics of that in India and other parts of the world that kind of look at, are mobile phones creating a burden for women, or are they relieving, things and creating more freedom for them? And I think that they're doing a combination of the two, where like girls in households that were that wanted to seek educational opportunities outside of the home in another part of Egypt were prioritized within the household to have a cell phone over boys in the same situation, so that the parents could have some more of a direct connection to the girls. In the Millennium Village in Kenya, in Derutu, in the northeast part of the country, where we're working with pastoral nomads, we've put mobile phones through the partnership with Ericsson in the schools. And the school actually has gone from, in the last year, from two girls, and this is before the cell phone, so they've gone from two girls to 50 girls, staying in the school, in the dormitories, et cetera. And one of the sort of hypotheses is that now with the cell phone and families' ability to stay in contact with their daughters, that we may actually be able to retain more girls in the school or convince families to allow their girls to come for education, stay in the school setting, and not be sort of pushed and pulled by the pastoral nomadic life that then disrupts their educational opportunities.
Do you think that resentment could grow because of that towards cell phones?
Of like having this constant connection or having...
That and just keeping young girls and women in school rather than out in the fields working. which could help, you know, bring in more money that way?
Well, they actually don't. It's not that they're working and making more money. It's that they are following the pastoral nomadic community. Mm-hmm. And the fear of, like, I did this focus group with key leaders in that community. The fear is that if something happens, they won't be able to contact them. And it takes like 3 or 4 days for families to be able to communicate with each other because they send a messenger boy who then has to run and do all sorts of things. So it has very little to do, I think, with the economic. I mean, in this particular community, their assets are their livestock. And oftentimes it's herd men and boys that are more likely to follow the livestock around than the girls. So they're not actually contributing to the economic well-being of the family. But it is that like fear of my daughter going off. But they are, I mean, in some ways they are an asset because, you know, they do, depending on the people group, there is this level of like, our daughters are our wealth because when they do get married, we get cows for them and that sort of thing. But, you know, the education piece and the value of education is really changing in this nomadic community. And we're hoping and, you know, we're looking and we're watching the trends to see if the communication, like, improves the likelihood of continuing on in education.
So bringing up the Millennium Villages Project, could you give a very brief description of what it is for those people who don't know? And you're also the mHealth advisor to the project.
Mm-hmm.
So what is your role in that, and what advice do you give?
Okay. Millennium Villages Project was established about 2 years ago to provide real-life evidence of proven intervention targeting the achievement of the Millennium Development Goals. And so the Millennium Development Goals were created in 2000. You know, in 2015, we will be, you know, there are targets that are set for 2015. And things like reducing maternal mortality by a certain amount, by a certain time across the world. And so, so the way that we're looking at mobile health is how do we strategically target the application of mobile phones, whether it's basic voice and text functions to improve access to emergency services, whether it is a mobile phone application to improve diagnostic capabilities and identification of disease, or data collection for decision making. My guidance essentially is really helping to make sure that the interventions that we implement in partnership with Ericsson and the operators that we're working with in each of the 10 countries are really aimed at contributing to the achievement of the Millennium Development Goals. And in my view, you know, in my area, it's specifically towards health, but we're also looking at, you know, how do we apply mobile technologies and other technologies, sort of like an ecosystem approach to, you know, achieving the MDGs for poverty eradication, for women's empowerment, for education, which is really exciting. I mean, it's really a test bed, and for me, as somebody who's been studying this for a really long time, it's like a dream to be able to really spend time, working through the kinks of how all of these things can work and will likely have an impact, hopefully, later on down the line.
Are there any success stories already or any lessons learned, or is it still very much in the initial pilot project phase?
You know, it's still very much in the initial pilot phase, although we do have some, like, anecdotal evidence. We set up a toll-free number in Rwanda for emergency medical transportation. And so there is evidence that is actually, people are getting to care faster, that there is this impression that case fatalities are going down. that more women are getting into health facilities to be delivered by a skilled labor and delivery professional, whether it's like a nurse midwife or an obstetric obstetrician gynecologist. And so that's kind of exciting. You know, I was there a few months ago and was talking to some of the facility-based staff and the ambulance worker, and you know, it seemed like, you know, they are from the local community and they could see changes just from having this toll-free number.
The idea being that if women can call a hospital or get into a hospital easier, then child mortality rates go down?
Child mortality rates go down, as well as maternal mortality rates go down. I mean, that's one of the known interventions is, you know, women delivering in a health facility is a known public health intervention that contributes to the reduction of maternal mortality.
What about this week's meetings? What have been your impressions? And today's the last day, so what are you going away with, and what are you hoping that everyone goes away with?
You know, we haven't had a one-day meeting on mobile health, let alone, you know, a four-day meeting on mobile health. So I'm, you know, incredibly jazzed about just even being in the room with as many of the sort of key players in this space, as well as people who maybe haven't been active but are really interested in becoming active in this space, you know, from the corporate side, from the NGO side, from the foundation side, and looking at, you know, what can we all do together to really, A, advance the field. And I think, you know, the fact that we're all talking about the creation of a mobile health alliance of some sort to help, you know, steer, provide a platform for collaboration, for standardization, for advocacy, those types of things, you know, I wasn't even thinking that that was something that would come out of this meeting. And to advance that far along in the discussions and the thinking, and, you know, is really exciting. And then there have been a number of projects that have come out of the discussion that that I think we're going to implement. I mean, I think we are going to.
Like what? What are some that you're excited about?
You know, the one that the working group that I was involved in, looking at limiting the effects of disease outbreaks and limiting outbreaks in general, and a lot of the tools for mobile surveillance as well as for alert systems exist, but they haven't been applied on a strategic scale to have an impact on global health. And so, I mean, one of the things that I'm excited about is working to figure out, you know, can we come out with a global system platform that enables people to collect data and view data on a mobile phone, on a computer, that is aggregated across multiple countries, that is localized. So if I'm working in a province, I can just see my provincial data. If I'm working at the national level, the Ministry of Health, I can look and see what's going on in the country overall. And if I'm at WHO or the FAO looking at, you know, human versus animal disease outbreaks, I can look at data that's aggregated across a bunch of different countries. And the what's interesting and exciting is that the framework exists, the paper-based system exists for doing these things. I mean, people are reporting into the WHO on these, you know, 14 diseases. And so how do we create like an EM health system that supports this? And we're not so naive in the sense that we're like, okay, you know, just because you have a tool does not mean that you're going to actually have an impact. And so one of the great things about some of the discussions that we've been having is looking at, well, how do we build the necessary capacity in some of the supporting areas to make sure that this is successful? So looking at, you know, lab systems, what type of capacity building support do we have to build to make sure that the lab tests and lab technicians are detecting the diseases that they need to be reporting on? You know, what types of support do we need to make sure from a management perspective that supply chain management for either diagnostic, you know, supplies, equipment are there, as well as you know, the drug supplies that need to go out. So if you have a massive outbreak within the animal health population and or the animal population, and you need to sort of initiate a mass vaccine response to that, that those systems are also in place. So, you know, to me, you know, it's exciting to look at how do we have a comprehensive approach to these things. Because technology alone is not going to do it. I mean, it's going to be, you know, technology in combination with, you know, a bunch of other things that need to really make it work. And so it was great to be in, you know, in these types of discussions around some of these activities. And the other projects, which I wasn't directly involved in discussing, you know, building systems and tools for positive living. One of the major areas that mobile health can have an impact on is in the prevention of disease, as well as, you know, helping people to maintain a positive sort of positive well-being. So looking at nutrition, exercise, support groups for people living with HIV and AIDS so that they have a positive outlook on life. So those are some of the, like, you know, interesting areas that just basic voice and text systems could really have an impact. And then some of the other things that people talked about were like a teledoc or an mdoc kind of diagnostic tool and system for medical doctors to have like a decision support tool, sort of a peripheral brain, but that's much more clinic based. It's, you know, how do you improve clinical practice and decision making and outcomes and quality of care that's provided. And then the fourth group, I'm kind of blanking on what they were doing. It was ComCare and the support tool for community health workers, which is already being developed. But you know, the major challenge there is how do we build a comprehensive and robust enough system so that it's really meaningful, that's scalable.
It sounds like that's the big overarching, that's the key word of this week, yes. Is scaling up one thing and then integrating. So the Mobile Health Alliance is obviously going to go towards that, and there's even been talk of a big conference in February, right?
Yes.
And maybe making some announcements about Mobile Health Alliance. What are the future plans and what can we expect?
I think we can expect much better coordinated projects, much more visible projects. I think we'll start to see it feature in journals and publications. I think people are really committed to establishing it as a collaborative space and field. I think we'll actually have some form of an organization that is the alliance with representation from, you know, corporations, from NGOs, from research institutions, academic institutions, both in developing countries as well as from developed countries, and just, you know, it's an exciting space. Like, nobody will deny that, you know, the spread of mobile technology does not have the potential to transform people's lives. And people's lives for health, people's lives for banking, people's lives for, you know, business development. It's already happening. You know, mobile health is happening. Whether or not we're a part of it, whether or not it's it has external support, it's, you know, people are engaging in mobile health activities, whether they are thinking about it in those terms or not. And so I think, you know, we're in a great position to really help solidify that and really help have it become more strategic and targeted so that people are really feeling the benefits in their daily lives.
Perfect. Thank you.
No, thank you.